Joint Work Session of the Borough Assembly and City Council, December 11th, 2019.
Good evening, happy holidays. We're here for an exchange of information with the City Council and the Borough Joint Work Session. So we have some new assembly members, the City Council's old hat, same old people. But we thought we'd go around and do some introductions just so everybody knows everybody. We don't know which social circles you're in. So Mike, why don't we start with you?
Okay.
Please.
I'm Mike Twenge, I'm the city manager. Lived in Kodiak now about 4.5 years.
I'm Charles Davison, city councilman.
John Wooden, city council.
Scott Arnold, borough assembly.
Terry Haynes, city council.
James Turner, borough assembly.
Dennis Simmons in his second term as assembly member.
Elijah Skinner, borough assembly.
Rich Walker, city council.
And Dwayne Dvorak, new to the borough assembly.
Andy Schroeder, borough assembly.
Michael Powers, borough manager.
And Bill Roberts, borough mayor.
And I'm Pat Branson, city mayor. So welcome, everybody. We'll begin with public comments. If there's anyone that would like to make public comment, we have a chair up there for you, and you have 3 minutes, so you can come forward and speak. And we have a timer. I think the city clerk has a timer. Anyone wanting to make public comments at this time? This is the only time for public comments during the work session. Okay, we'll move right along here and go to our agenda items. And the first item is the Salmon Work Group update, review of a draft letter to submit to the Board of Fish, the Kodiak Fin Fish meeting to be held in January. And I think I have a note here, the Borough Clerk will be distributing copies. Tara, that's been done. Are we doing that? Is that the right one to the Board of Fish?
Page one.
And who's speaking to this? Is this Nate? Come on up, Nate, if that's all right with everyone. Is this the one? Okay, thank you. Yeah. Hi, Nate. Yes, this is a letter from you.
Thank you, Joint Work Session, for having the representative of the Salmon Work Group here to speak with you tonight. It's a brief synopsis, I guess, of where we're at. We're looking at 4.5 weeks till our board meeting coming up in January. We're feeling optimistic, but at the same time cautious. And I think that renewed efforts from the Kodiak Salmon Work Group to reach out within the community, make sure that all the pieces of the overall strategy are in place, are falling into place, and kind of tying up loose ends and finishing up projects as they come along. I'll just go over real quick. We're one of our current projects is working with Rising Tide Communications to build a website platform that ultimately gives the background pieces and the bullet points relative to the proposals of concern that we're going to see shown at the board meeting in January. We've got some graphics that are reaching out within the fleet to gain pictures and visual data, as well as content to help everyone understand the primary issues. And so we're working really closely with them on that. They're also ramping up on their Facebook posting of, you know, trying to boost posts and reach out to the community and to reach out within the social circles to make sure that everybody knows, hey, this is important. We need to hear heartfelt testimony. We need to hear a lot of it. I mean, we're gonna have a boardroom full of Kodiak fishermen, Chinook fishermen, Kokema fishermen, and so it's important that the face of Kodiak be shown in that meeting. Next on the kind of big project list is the economic analysis being conducted by an organization out of Anchorage called SPORC. A gal named Melissa Hewer, that's her primary business, and she's essentially taking each proposal by proposal and extrapolating what they could mean economically as a loss to Kodiak by proposal. And so it's kind of it would be a really interesting finished product. I think she has 3 or 4 of the proposals kind of in a rough draft form that are very close to being finished. The remainder, a total of 9-10 proposals of concern, serious concern, Chinook and Kokema proposals. And so she's been working through, and ultimately I think the only thing holding up some of those is
data compilation from EDFNG, waiting for some of those data requests to be fulfilled. So that'll be, I think that's going to be a really powerful piece going into this board meeting to show, hey, you know, we're in a pretty precarious time as a community, especially, I mean, you guys all know in the news, our fisheries in general are kind of in trouble. We've got salmon on one hand, on the political side, we've got stocks of concern on the federal side on cod. I mean, it's a big deal for Kodiak. And so I think that showing that economic impact that these proposals could potentially have is going to be a really loud voice. Currently, the salmon work group and a number of individuals, I believe the Chamber of Commerce has agreed to sort of step up and help us with some of this, is some of the local stock graphics, kind of trying to show the visual imagery. If I may, that there's a brief historical aspect to this, and that was in 2016, a genetic study came out showing that Kodiak harvests a significant amount of Cook Inlet sockeye. It's not an unknown fact that we harvest Cook Inlet sockeye, it's just finer detail of how much we actually caught during a certain snapshot in time. And that seems to be what the Cook Inlet groups and some of the board members on the Board of Fish like to hone in on, is, hey, well, you know, this shows you catch a significant amount. What's missing from that genetic study, and it's implicit within the descriptions of the usage for that study, is that it was only focused on sockeye, and Kodiak is a mixed stock fishery with multiple species over multiple run timings. And so our job is to portray in simple visual form the small amount of fish that was relative in that study to the overall amount of fish taken during that time period. Right, that study was conducted during our pink and chum salmon fishery, and ultimately the emotions behind it kind of got welled up because sockeye is of course the most valuable species, and so that's something we're working on, is creating those graphics, making sure we have the data to pull those up into, you know, pie charts or however they're going to be portrayed. Another piece that we're currently working on is, and it's actually finished at this point, is an environmental situation analysis with the warming ocean temperatures, with the climate. Dr. Mike Litzau from, what is that, NOAA now, has just finished that. He gave us a brief summary of that, and it's hard to refute the facts that the genetic study, you know, and ultimately his study of the climate during this time period was directly related to the study of the genetic study to kind of show, hey, we had some anomalous fish migration patterns totally attributable to anomalous weather patterns as well. And so that's kind of a final piece to that, to refuting the genetic study as far as its use for what Cook Inlet users hope that the board will use it for allocative type implications. And so that's another good piece. We've got, as I mentioned at the fisheries work group, we have contracted with Denby Lloyd. He was really hesitant until I think he started to get caught up in the emotions of all of it. And he signed on with Kodiak Salmon work group. He's under contract with the work group. Him and three other quote unquote subject matter experts. We call them former directors, board members, and their insight into strategy development and to helping us produce not only bullet points and points of note that need to be put into written comment, but also for our oral testimony coming up at the board meeting. They're a wealth of resource. They're going to be here. We're currently planning a January Board of Fish boot camp the 4 days prior to the board meeting. Denby and associates will be at that. They'll be here for the 4 days prior to and during the Board of Fish meeting. And essentially, anybody who needs either a quick tutorial on the issue at hand, or why or why not the proposals make sense, or why they're justified, or why not. That's essentially where their power will be felt in preparing us to make sure that our oral testimonies and our written testimonies are well Where else are we at? We have a comment deadline of December 27th. That's why I believe tonight you guys are going to both be looking at, I believe Duncan prepared two letters, one for the city and one for the borough. We respectfully request that whatever efforts can be made, and hope that we could be in perilous potential times. I mean, we're looking I don't have to sit here and beat on the table to tell you the importance of fisheries to this community. So that's one thing that we believe that the municipality signing those letters or submitting those letters and comments would go wonders to the Board of Fish to show, hey, you know, this is a concern to the whole community. This isn't just a salmon fishery. I think that's all I have. If there's any comments, any questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Thank you. Thank you, Nate. So we do have two letters before. Should they go to the fisheries work group, or is that too early to go to the fisheries work group? I'm looking at John, Terry, Rebecca.
Well, I told you time. We haven't seen this one.
Sorry?
I have not seen this one, but we did have a resolution that came before us.
Okay.
About 2 months ago, when it was that went through, but this one, we haven't seen this one.
Okay, are there questions, comments, Dennis?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I've been out of loop for a little while, and I haven't tapped into our great resource, Mr. Turner. But when is our next legal battle with Cook Inlet and backed by our governor on sport fishing versus commercial? Is it there one coming up? A court battle?
Through the chair. Mr. Simmons, I mean, ultimately, I don't know where we're at with the lawsuit. I believe you mean the lawsuit by Upper Cook Inlet Association. I don't know where we're at with that, to be honest. Ultimately, whenever I say legal battle, Board of Fish is our main forum where this stuff goes down, and we have the Kodiak meeting in January, followed by Upper Cook Inlet meeting in February, and I believe statewide meeting in March. And so they could pull fast ones at any one of those, but right, mostly in the Kodiak meeting is the one of concern.
So let's keep this focused perhaps on the update. If there are any questions or comments, then we can get to the letter if that's okay with everyone. So any questions or comments on Nate's update? Sounds like you're fully loaded, so to speak, with your expertise in doing battle.
Thank you.
No comments or questions? Okay, and the letters that were drafted, did anyone have any comments or questions about that? And you, Nate, you said that Duncan wrote these up?
Yeah.
So drafted them?
Yep. And it was, Madam Mayor, it was through a recommendation that the Kodiak Fisheries Work Group that I believe that a letter of support could potentially go a long ways. As Mr. Whitten mentioned, there was a resolution signed by both bodies. Mm-hmm. Every little bit helps.
So the timing of this would be the 27th for the deadline in getting these in?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Andy, then John?
So tonight, are we looking at this one that was circulated says submitted via online comments. Is there any point in discussing that one? Because is that one already done?
I don't know. Is that the one from the borough?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I can't answer that.
No, I think, Rebecca, you just put this one on.
Yeah, it's a draft and we'll be considering it at our regular meeting.
Okay.
Okay.
So this is in play for discussions.
Yep.
Okay. John, did you have a question?
Well, I did. I mean, if both letters are going to be the same, I would suggest it would be better to have just one letter go from both bodies signed by both mayors rather than send two of the same letters signed by different groups.
Was there a strategy with that, Nate? Do you know?
Madam Mayor, I can't speak to the strategy behind that. That might be a Duncan mastermind. I apologize if he's not here tonight to speak to that.
Well, that's okay. I think that in what I remember previously when in sitting on the fisheries work group, that sometimes we did have two letters just to have more comments go in from the different bodies.
Well, this one letter here is definitely from the city because it just talks about, mentions the city, not the borough. So we assumed that you wanted a second letter.
Yeah, well, that's what he drew up. Duncan drew up for that purpose. Go ahead, Rebecca.
Yeah, it's too bad Duncan isn't here. I know he did specifically prepare two different letters, mm-hmm. and when you read the letters, they are
different. Yeah.
But yeah, he didn't tell me his strategy, but he did say that he felt it was valuable to have two different ones.
Mm-hmm. I withdraw my comment.
Okay, yeah. So, go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, if I may, for what it's worth, I think that this is going to be a battle of numbers, and the more letters, the better. Mm-hmm. It's redundant to have from both bodies on both bodies, but we share the same feelings. However, our plan from the Sanger side, I'm sure the Northwest Senators side, which are the long red of the Cody Samuel group, is the more letters in opposition,
right,
the more.
Right. Okay, Scott?
Are you getting additional letters from communities around Kodiak?
Yeah, through the chair, Mr. Arndt, I and two of the others from the Kodiak Sanders Association were going on a trip to Old Harbor. We're going to spend 3 days in Old Harbor writing letters. We have, it's our understanding that the Board of Fish is requesting that letters of opposition or support be made specifically to the proposal. So I've already written 5 or 6 that are designed at each proposal, with the bullet points that be filled in from some, however they want to say it, right? We've seen the tactic of writing a form letter and having a whole bunch of people send it in. It doesn't seem to be effective. So ultimately, giving people just the foundation letter and having them fill in the one paragraph. And so, personally, I can speak from the Kodiak Sanders Association, as the president of the Sanders Association, I have a goal of 50 letters from the Sanders Association. That's my goal, not so I believe Duncan has mentioned the more letters the better. Mm-hmm. We've heard from board members heartfelt testimony, and ultimately the letters that come out of large organizations or representative organizations, Native groups, municipalities, trade associations, those speak a lot louder at times than an individual mom-and-pop letter. And so we're getting it all.
Nate, would you suggest that we also have representatives from the municipalities give testimony as well?
Absolutely. I'd say everything, every little bit helps.
And then could you tell us about this boot camp, which might help us
In
preparing for that testimony? When is that and where?
Madam Mayor, so we have the dates, it's the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th set aside. We have the Harbor Master Room.
Fisherman's
Hall. Down at Harbor Master Room is reserved for those 4 days. There'll be refreshments in there, there'll be computers, there'll be printers, and ultimately that's kind of home base. Demi and his associates will be based out of the hotel, but there will always be some subject matter expert within that room, and that's sort of our meeting place. Those 4 days before, 2 to 3 hours of organized, hey, here's what you can say to this proposal, here's what you can say to this proposal, but ultimately I believe that one-on-one, should you need some talking points, you need to talk to Demi, because he can tell you the snapshots. And to be honest, speaking with Demi myself, he's set me up at ease a lot. He just has that mentality, that ease of his ease of speaking and ease of making everything seem okay. And I think that's the plan behind that boot camp, is to make sure that everybody has the necessary tools. If we need to print out testimony for people to read, mm-hmm. if we need to make sure that they have RCs that we need to submit. However, that's going to be a nice
So, Andy, I know you had your hand up. Is it something that you could give us more detail with times and place and the dates as a reminder to the clerk so that we have that?
Sure.
That's okay with you, Bill?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, as the strategy unfolds with those specific 4 days, we'll make sure that we get that passed out, not only to the municipality, but to the whole community as well.
Good. Andy?
Oh, I'm good, thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? And I think the council members, we have 4 council members here, and so is there a consensus to approve the letter with the council members here that we can, we don't have a meeting. Okay, so let's stop that, so we'll send that along. We'll look forward to the boot camp. Any other comments or questions from Nate? Okay, thanks for your work. We'll be there to support you. We know how important it is. Okay, we'll now go to the Pink Salmon Disaster Funding Update, and I'm not sure who's going to respond to this, if it's the managers or fisheries representatives. Who's going to be talking about that? Anyone? Bueller? One of my favorite moments. Is anyone updated on the salmon? James, are you updated on that?
As far as the processors, yes. As far as the fishermen, no. Our last update was the check would be in hand for the end of December for the processors to pay the processing crew. As far as the fishermen, I don't know where that is.
I think, did we get something from Brad Gilman on that? Mm-hmm.
Yes, we did. And all I'm focusing on is the municipality piece, and that hasn't been defined yet. So we're waiting for...
That's back in Washington currently being fought between Office of Budget Management and I forget which committee was, the House committee was looking at that, the Senate committee was looking at that, but that hasn't been resolved.
Is it Commerce?
Commerce.
So with the fisheries work group, wasn't there discussion, Terry, Rebecca, and John, about looking for infrastructure projects for municipalities, something like that?
Only within the fisheries work group, but not outside of that. So really just trying to, because right now the criteria for municipalities hasn't been determined.
Okay.
Right.
So is there any other update about that? We're all waiting for it, I guess. It's been delayed.
We should have one next week. We should have one. We can certainly report back.
Okay. Anybody else have information on that? Okay, well maybe they'll have some checks soon because it certainly has been delayed quite a bit. Okay, then we're here, we're ready to go on to number C, and discuss the use of the borough and city Kodiak cruise ship tax dollars to build or fix the public restrooms in downtown area. So, managers, I'll look to you for that.
I'll speak up to that. You know, during the fisheries work group meeting, the most recent one that I attended, Assemblymember Kavanaugh brought this up and wondered if cruise ship tax dollars could be used for restrooms at Pier 2. And I didn't catch, some of you that were there could maybe help me, but I didn't catch that you wanted to do anything downtown, but perhaps. But I think the conversation sparked because in our capital budget, I was talking about adding some bathrooms on Pier 2. Right now, we have a portable toilet. And so we have, you know, cargo coming in and out. We have 29 cruise ships this last year. We have a lot of people there. Whether the cruise ship passengers need that bathroom or not is to be determined. But there's not a permanent bathroom at Pier 2. So, we do receive cruise ship dollars, funds, so does the borough. We share that. Comes out of the $5 cruise ship tax. We each share the $2.50 apiece, $2.50 per passenger. And last year, we both received $42,752.50, so close to $43,000. And what the city uses it for is security for the port whenever there's cruise ships for sure. We have staffing down there, but it can also be used for anything cruise ship related, and that's maybe where the bathroom idea came from. So I haven't pursued any further beyond this, but I don't know if the assembly has it.
The borough hasn't pursued any capital projects with the money. We were waiting for the legislation, the lawsuits to work out and work their way through. They have. We obviously don't operate a port that services cruise ships, and so we would be presumably looking to partner with the city.
Is that the lawsuit you're referring to, Michael, the one that Juno had?
Yes.
Oh, okay. And that's still out there?
No, that's resolved.
It is resolved. Okay. They bought the statue, and is that the one?
Yes, the whale statue.
Okay. So, this came up at the fisheries work group, and John and Rebecca and Terry, you have any other information on that, or is it on your agenda for further meetings?
Well, no, not really. I think it seemed almost an offhand comment from Julie Kavanaugh. There wasn't anything we pursued. It wasn't on the agenda. It's not on the next agenda, so I don't know if it was just some... I think she, I'm, I consider can't speak for her, but I sort of sense she was just sort of saying, is it possible, is this something that could be done? Not let's get it done next week. It was just an idea. So that's as far as it went, and we haven't brought it up. We haven't talked about it anything.
So it might be something that each body could pursue and maybe bring up at the next joint work session. See, Charlie?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Mayor. I think considering the age group of our cruise passengers, it would behoove us to accommodate them better with some of the restrooms. And one of the particular types of restrooms that I've looked at is the Portland Loo.
Oh, yes.
Have you?
Yes.
I didn't encourage anybody to look at that because it's developed by the city of Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And they're selling them, and they're kind of like the bathrooms on Paris.
Mm-hmm.
But they're in all kinds of inclement weather, and they're very well constructed. And that's something that if we are going to pursue this, I would recommend, because I would also think that we would need two or three strategically planned. I know there's a lot of people in our own community that could use them, you know, because there's just not enough public restroom facility here, and most people probably wouldn't want to use the one next to the downtown police station because it's like going into a prison.
A lot of them stop by the senior center and use our facilities. Yeah. I'll tell you that. Right. So, go ahead, Mike.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So, just to add why this conversation came up is we were talking about infrastructure use of the Pink Salmon Disaster Relief Fund. So, what it would be the criteria available for the municipalities, and that spurred that idea to perhaps put up some public restrooms. That's
so
how that started.
Once we get that criteria, we could look at that, and even if we don't meet that criteria, it might be something we might pursue anyway, mm-hmm, with other funds. So this is something that we can carry over, knowing that it was a side comment at the fisheries work group, and the city can certainly look at it and then see where the borough is on any kind of cruise ship money that you get. Would that be agreeable? An idea that we can continue to float? Charlie?
I just wanted to add a historical significance. Is that restroom downtown costs $250,000, and there's no excuse for that. And I just add that because the Portland Loo is much more.
Yeah, that's an ugly building. It was like built like a fort.
Impractical. But that building was originally built with the idea of putting the taxi dispatcher in where the police office is, and that they could, you know, keep an eye on any kind of illicit activity. But then it came out that some of the dispatchers were selling drugs. But that's life.
So maybe we could research the Portland Loo. I have seen information about
that. They're very clever. They're very cleverly
check
developed.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Copy Portland.
Portland Loo.
Okay.
One more comment.
Yeah, go ahead, Bill, sir.
If you're gonna, I agree that downtown and around we need some public restrooms, and we can say it's for the cruise ships. I agree with Charlie. There's a lot of people out shopping and there's no place to go. And the older you get, sometimes you really gotta go. But the problem we have with anything that's a public restroom is who's gonna take care of it? Who's gonna protect it? Because it's gonna become a place nobody wants to go to.
Well, that would be part of the discussion.
Yeah.
Certainly, it would have to be full scope. Because that's what was Charlie just demonstrated and said that's what happened. So,
but these are well constructed. They're pretty much destructive proof, by the way.
You'd have to be in Portland.
Yeah.
Yeah. Downtown in Portland. Okay, so we'll consider all that certainly and keep that in front of us.
Thank you.
Because we're all getting older, right? Okay, anything else on that note? Okay, we'll go right into the consolidation update, and I know, James, you're co-chair of that committee, and Terry's on it, so the managers are here, so I'll look to you. Yes.
Actually, the alternate.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
You
two are here to give us a report, if you would, please. An update.
So while we're moving along,
can I have the plans, please?
Slowly, but we're moving along. I think that there's a large disconnect between the community and the consolidation committee. We've had one person show up in the last four meetings, and it's kind of quiet in there whenever there's no public comment.
Other than that, we have gone through most of the, I'd say two-thirds of the duties of each, whether it's the city or whether it's the borough in charge of it, and what we actually have to perform in those duties. But we plan on getting into budgets in the middle of January to the end of January, hopefully, if we keep moving along. And then we'll kind of discuss how that goes. Right now, I still think that the group is a 50-50 split, maybe a 60-40 at best, towards a no, but that remains to be seen because we really haven't voted on it at all. I think everybody is really interested in learning more about budgets and before they make a lot of big decisions, which is a good thing. Trying to figure out how to pay for it is the most important thing. And I'd say that we're just slowly moving along.
So you have, do you have two meetings a month?
So we have had two meetings a month up until January, and then we'll have whatever the borough assembly meets for a regular meeting, our meeting schedules will change to the Monday prior to the borough regular meeting. So it'll still be two as long as there's two borough meetings, but if there's only one borough meeting, then it'll only be one meeting that month. But it's pretty much scheduled for the whole next year.
Okay.
So.
Thank you. Terry, did you have any update on that?
No, I agree with all that. I think Megan and James have done a good job of figuring out how big of bites we can take per meeting. We're just going right down the work plan. The work plan seems pretty well scoped. And essentially, our job is just filling out the form. And then we're having, you know, sensitive discussions that come from filling out the forms. We get, you know, question by question. I would agree that we've had a public disconnect, and whatever it takes, I think it's essential that we get the public more involved in the conversation and you know, just force them to know the stuff that we're learning, essentially, so that the public can be a little better educated to have a better conversation.
And how are you going to do that?
I spoke to one of the writers at the Daily Mirror, and told her that we were going to be diving into the budget in January to make sure that she was there. She said she definitely wanted to be there for that. So hopefully that'll draw a little more of the public in while she puts the first article out on that. So
do you have a plan for informing the public where you're having meetings all year long to keep them updated?
Yeah, the borough website is going to have the meetings on it. The Facebook account also posts about the meetings, but other than that, we don't really have a plan other than trying to get the newspaper involved a little bit more.
Okay. I think we talked about a town hall or something.
We talked about it when we haven't decided.
That might be something that the city and the borough could kind of get back and forth on and maybe figure out what the right timing for that situation.
Yeah.
We might get more members of the public to event.
Okay, any questions or comments from James and Terry?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That's a lot. There are a lot of meetings.
I have to say, James has been doing a terrific job lately filling in as the chair.
Okay. On that note, do the managers have anything?
I could echo that too, James. You are doing a great job chairing that meeting, and you've been most of the meetings. It's been with you, so thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to annexation. I'll look to Mike to give us an update on that, please.
Well, I'd like to start out by saying the definition of annexation, or what I think annexation is. An annexation is when we add land to the city boundaries through a legal process, and usually population. So we're looking at a couple areas of town. Annexation north and annexation south is what we're calling them. With a local boundary commission who does the approval for any annexation or consolidation. The city's annexed 963 acres during the times of growth since the 60s on 10 separate occasions. A little history there. since 2017, the city council's had 9 work sessions talking about annexation. So our goal, established by the city council, has been to be very transparent about what we're doing. I know we brought this up at the consolidation meetings. They understand that we're considering annexation. It's not new. It's happened literally since the 60s. Some people think it's coincidental that we're talking annexation again, but like I said, we've had 9 work sessions since 2017, so long before the committee was established for consolidation. So it's, you know, what our goal is to look at the guiding principles that outline our values and how we would provide extra services to the annexed areas. Transparency in the process is something that we've all establishes one of our prime criterias. And then the cost effectiveness of a delivery of services. You know, we're looking at what that would be. We're talking the police, expansion of police services, fire services. We already provide water and sewer into service area 1, which is annexation north, we call it. So we maintain that infrastructure already. And then, you know, once again, about community outreach, you know, we're trying to make it well established that we're talking about it. We haven't had much comment either at our latest work sessions. Just some probably one-on-one comments about they support the idea. I know I have brought it up to the city Chamber of Commerce. They were mostly in support that shared that with me. And at this time, we're evaluating north and south, what the costs are. We've had meetings with the Kodiak Police Department, the Public Works Department, Service Area 1 chair, because of road maintenance. And next meetings will be with our fire chiefs, both the city and the borough fire chief, to talk about the area needs for that, you know, service up north, and then also what concerns that we have and the services that are provided. As you know, the city has a mutual aid agreement with the borough for fire suppression. It's current. We're looking at signing another updated mutual aid agreement Friday. And there's a possibility, if there is annexation to occur, there's a possibility of creating a, this is a possibility, I'm speaking early on this, but a possibility of a volunteer paid department for that annexation north area, or mutual. So annexation south is an area that includes approximately 2 square miles from the southern border of the city, existing boundary down to the state airport area. There's 7 primary landowners in that area, largest being the natives of Kodiak. We have spoken in the past, it's been, I'd say, at least a good year now since we've spoken to natives of Kodiak about expanding services out to their property. That's currently on hold. And the city, did I mention the city owns a couple hundred acres in that south area as well. So we would be encompassing areas north and south. Annexation north is primarily the service area 1, service district 1, sometimes called. It includes undeveloped city of Kodiak property, and it includes our wastewater treatment plant, which is actually outside of our boundary right now. In the late 1990s, this is not new again, 223 residents signed a petition to annex north. I think what I've heard so far about that was included service area 2. I think that's more Minocqua Bay area, and that wasn't very popular, so that may be why it failed. But there was interest back then, and there's been some interest now again. So city management, council members, we're looking at consolidation. We're putting the package together for the council and the public to understand. We met during the Alaska Municipal League with the local boundary commission. Eileen Collin Reese and Jediah Smith. And we talked about our, I know Councilmember Haynes and Whitten was there. We talked about what are some of the steps to take and what to avoid in filing a petition. And I think we're on the right track is pretty much what they said. You could agree with that. But I think our, you know, we're going to move slowly through this process, make sure we understand what we're biting off, and make it very transparent. Those are some of the key elements to annexation north and south. And some say there's a sense of place because these people that live in service area one, the public that lives there is, you know, using our city services. We provide EMS and fire out there. We have water and sewer out there. Some could say they want a boat back into the city. That's, you know, some say that. So anyway, overall, that's where we're at with the annexation. We're looking at two parcels again, north and south. There's two different approaches for annexation of either area. I know the one, there's one approach where you could ask the legislature to approve your petition directly without a vote of the people. We've chosen not to go that route. We feel like it's more important that the public weigh in on that decision. How that would go is there would be a vote both of the city residents and the proposed annexed area. They would both vote, and that tally would determine the outcome of annexation. Once local boundary commission has approved your petition, then it goes to a vote. But that's a long ways off. Like I said, one of our next discussions is to meet with the fire chiefs and see what that would entail, and we're just going to keep building our data.
So Dennis and Andy, did you have your hands up? Yeah. And so I just want to ask the council members first, if I might, if they have any other comments regarding this. John?
Well, Mike alluded to it initially. I think this is something we've been looking at for the last couple of years, so it's not new. But I think the biggest one, and Terry's brought this up several times, is that we believe that for the residents who live in Service District 1, probably the majority, if not all of them, use city services or city, or they frequent city businesses where they pay sales tax. And I think it's really important that if you're going to pay a tax on a particular area, you have the ability to vote on the taxation process. So one of the biggest, I think, advantages would be to enfranchise the people that actually live outside the current city limits. And within the areas where the city provides the majority of the services, I think we look, as you said, you mentioned the Menasha Bay area, but that's not on the city sewer and water, so that's probably beyond the area we're looking at right now. But mainly it's just to make it more of a contiguous community rather than having what is at this point, I think, in time, sort of an unrealistic boundary that doesn't really reflect the current population base and growth in Kodiak. So it's a way really to tie the community together, and that's how we approach it. But I would just want to emphasize more than anything else is to be as open and as transparent, I think is the word you used a couple of times. We talked about doing town hall meetings and doing everything we can to make sure that, you know, those that are interested, as you mentioned, know what's going on. So there's no surprises, there's nothing that's going to be hidden. This is just something, as the manager, we're just working through the process for the benefit of the people that live in those areas.
Any other, Terry?
And as far as we could determine on the consolidation committee discussions we had, in any annexation that the city might do wouldn't conflict with whatever consolidation would go forward to. The two aren't mutually exclusive at all. And in fact, whichever way the vote might go with annexation might help to guide the newly consolidated community anyway.
So. Charlie, did you have your hand up? And then we'll go to Andy and Dennis.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask about of the 200 acres in the southern part, how much of that is actually watershed? A lot of it, isn't it?
I don't have that fact.
Okay. And then in regards to the vote, just if both sides, if one side voted in the majority, I mean in the positive and one side negative, they don't combine the votes, right? Both sides have to be in the positive.
I think it's a majority, if that's correct. I think it's a majority of each district. So the proposed and the current.
Okay. Andy and then Dennis?
That was my question, and what I'm hearing the answer is the majority, both have to vote yes.
Exactly.
The people to be annexed and the people doing the annexing.
Yeah.
I guess one question is, how do you gauge, I mean, is it through these town halls? How are you going to gauge the temperature of the sort of the people to be annexed to Service District 1? Do you have a mechanism to do that through mailings, or is that, or is this more through public forums and town hall meetings, and so that you know, you have some idea whether it's bound for success or whether they really want it, because a 1990s, you know, kind of survey is pretty old.
Sure.
Go ahead, Mike.
So we've talked about a survey, reaching out and doing some sort of survey, a Survey Monkey idea, and make that very public so that people can weigh in on it. That's one way, you know. By having open meetings, hopefully we'll get public comments on that. People tend to come in when they feel strongly about something, and maybe more passive when they're not really concerned about what the decision is. So to answer your question, a survey is one idea we've come up with so far.
And we've talked about, if I might, other venues as well, you know, focus groups, that kind of thing, but having a plan to continue that education and outreach. That hasn't been, I don't think that's been put together, but Josie, I think, has put together some draft ideas with that. But something we just initially have to talk about and realize the importance of it. Just a second, Bill. Dennis had his hand up. Andy, did you have anything else?
No, thank you.
Okay, and then you.
With all due respect, I would yield to the...
No, I'm calling on you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I really admire the transparency. That is super admirable, and it needs to be that way. Is there a time frame, a goal of when you want to put this on the ballot? 2 years, 1 year? No, not set?
Go ahead, Mike.
We're still in the fact-finding stage, of course. We talked about a vote. If we were ready for an October ballot election, that's possible, but we don't want to, you know, corner ourselves on that. When we talked to the local monitoring commission, they said this might be a great idea for a special election. So that way it could fall in whenever you're ready and not rush the process. But we don't have a current timeline, but we're moving forward. But you know, this is not something we want to hastily rush into, and like council member. Assembly member, sorry, I'm so used to that. Shorter said that how do you gauge the population? So we want to do what the people want, and we want to enfranchise them if that's what they want.
Thank you.
Bill? Yeah, you mentioned that when this was looked at back in the 90s, that Service District 2, or whatever you want to call Menasha Bay, you felt was the reason it probably wasn't considered. What I would like you to consider is, if you just annex what's on sewer and water, you're going to have we're going to have a heck of a problem forming a service district out of what's left to take care of those roads. And I think that you should probably annex the whole road system out as far out as the end of the
Fire District 1.
All the way out. Fire District 1, take the whole thing. I mean, it's good that you're working with the fire chiefs and that, trying to figure out maybe a volunteer fire, still take, that's all good. But I think that if you start carving and leaving little pieces out, there's going to be problems for the remainder. And one of the biggest problems I see is there's not enough tax base to pay to keep your roads maintained well enough. And that would be a concern of mine. I don't know, Scott might be able to correct me on that, but I think that would be a concern. I don't see why, if you go to annex, you don't take the whole road system. And you know, from the airport to the end of Menasha, I think that would be great if you're going to do that and make it all work. Granted, not everybody has sewer and water, but everybody doesn't have to have those services.
Well, that's something, you know, we could certainly consider, but we're just starting this process and doing the research and analyzing it, and so we certainly will take that under consideration. But it's what the people want as well. That's what the driving force is.
And I think if people really realize that if you don't annex them and they're real proud because they're outside the city limits, mm-hmm. they're going to end up paying very high taxes.
And that information needs to be put forth.
I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody else have their hand up? Oh, Dwayne, sorry.
Well, I didn't have my hand up, but I guess just following along on that same theme, it's been my understanding that the city doesn't have a policy to extend water and sewer outside of either the city limits or the area that's already being served. And I think going through this exercise and realizing how many hoops to jump through to have an annexation, if somebody wants to extend water and sewer outside the existing system and they have to do an annexation to do that, that's a pretty high bar to basically grow the city and to grow the ratepayers for the water and sewer. Perhaps, I don't know if you've reached out to anybody in the Menasha area, but it's an area that's pretty well known for not really having good on-site water and septic system potentials, which has been a big drag on the ability for people to develop density out there, notwithstanding topography and stuff like that too. But maybe some of those people are interested. I know it sounds like maybe they weren't interested back in the 90s, but maybe people are a little savvier now and see the benefits of at least having that potential. And the last thing I would mention is the city also has the Menasha watershed, which is outside city limits, right, in which you have an extraterritorial jurisdiction which allows you to assert your own ordinances out there, and yet, you know, if you went that far, you could go all the way and have that in your city boundaries as well. You know, you've got your pipeline and your water system out there. You send people out there every day, but it's outside the city, just like your treatment plant and stuff, so.
Yeah, good points. Anything else on annexation? Mike, did you have anything else?
I could comment to that.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, we talked about what it would take to add more customers to the system and to start bringing in, I think it's in that area you're referring to, we would have to really change our infrastructure underground to accept more volume. It just isn't the capacity right now in that area. So we're talking about, you know, a large project to do that as well. So millions of dollars, of course. And then our treatment plant has to be able to handle extra capacity, and sometimes we're close to capacity. So there's a lot of consideration there if we do want to increase our water sewer footprint. You would know that.
Any other comments or questions? So we just, it's important for us to exchange information, keep that open, is what we're doing, each of the bodies. And John?
Well, I appreciate Dwayne's comments and Andy's too. And I'd like to just continue to have this on the agenda for subsequent meetings. But I think it's really important to get more than a city perspective. You know, it's, sometimes we, not with my office, but we do certainly just have our city focus. But I think it's really important to get that broader input and also just the different ideas, different suggestions. Obviously, cost is huge. You know, the capacity issues on the wastewater treatment plant are a limiting factor, and the cost to increase that capacity is probably beyond our means right now. But I think if you look at Kodiak as a community, to me it just seems that it's hard to fathom at this point in time, maybe not 20, 30 years ago, but this point in time, that we have somewhat disenfranchised, not just because of the vote, but because of the boundary. They live outside the boundary. So these people aren't residents of the city of Kodiak, but they are Kodiak residents. And I think it's just time to have basically a contiguous city of Kodiak or Kodiak community that falls within one boundary, you know, beyond all the other things. I think it's just where we've grown to as a community. So even though that's sort of a concept you really can't put a dollar value to, it's more of a philosophical perspective, but I think it's important for us as a community as we move forward.
So there's a lot to look at, and I think having certainly perspectives like Bill Gabe and Dwayne with your involvement with the referrals is important as well. So thank you for those comments. Anything else on that note, Dennis?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just want to ask,
I know that he's almost over. With this air balancing going on, I can just barely hear somebody speaking. I don't want to miss a word, so please speak up.
And the meeting's almost over.
I know.
But that's okay.
There is that noise going on there. So, and I have great hearing, but anyway, thank you.
Okay. So we'll keep those items, both consolidation and annexation, on the future discussion items, if that's okay with everyone. And so with that, the next meeting schedule, we had talked, you know, about meeting every quarter, and that kind of got put aside with the great summer we had. Is that something that the group would like to do, is meet every quarter? So we could look in at March, perhaps, to meet and see where we are with the legislature and all those items. Scott?
I think that's a great idea. Part of it because of the budget process with the legislature. Probably, I must say, the first part of March, if possible.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember, when is AML?
Mid-February. Like the 16th or 18th, okay, something like that.
So maybe the first part of
March. Yeah. Okay. Would that be a good time for most everyone? First part of March? Okay. So we'll look at the clerks to set that date up. Are there any other items that you want for future discussion items? We can also pass that on to the clerk as well. Anything else that you want to add, though, tonight specifically? Governor's budget? Okay. Maybe not right now. Yeah, I've analyzed it. Well, I'm not analyzed. I've just looked at it.
I was going to say, really? Quite fast, man.
Well, I've looked at different departments that affect, anyway, DOT mainly. Okay, well, I guess that's it. Have a great holiday. Thank you for everyone for coming. And yes, Merry Christmas. And we'll see you in March.
He left K through 12.